Nathan Fraser Show, episode number 94, The Three Deadly Sins of Entrepreneurship. Here we go.
Mixing business with politics. This is The Nathan Fraser Show.
What is up, free market squad, in the place to be? It's your boy, Nathan Fraser. Thank you for taking a half hour out of your week to hang with me. I am, of course, the high priest of propaganda. You, of course, you are the free market squad, and I do appreciate your time. We're going to be talking about the three most common mistakes that entrepreneurs make, the three deadly sins of entrepreneurship. I think that'll be the title of this week's episode. And first of all, I do have to apologize if my voice sounds a little bit scratchy or maybe it cracks like I'm eating pork chops and applesauce, going through puberty again. I've been sick as fuck for the last like week and a half. I don't know. I got my ass kicked with this cold and flu bug that's been going around. And for a couple of days, I couldn't even talk. So yeah, that's a thing. I do apologize. It's been like 2 weeks, I think, since I put out the last episode. So I'm going to make it up to you this week. We're going to be talking about the three biggest mistakes that are just deal killers for entrepreneurs, business killers. And you, more than likely, you probably suffer from one of these misconceptions. And if you listen to this episode, if you take heed to what we're going to be talking about, you can save yourself a lot of heartache, a lot of time. And here's the deal. Here's the plain, cold, hard facts, the hard reality of what it is. 80% of businesses fail within the first year. And of the 20% that don't fail, 80% of those fail within the first 5 years. So an overwhelming majority of businesses fail in this country. And probably not just this country. It's probably just a worldwide thing. And there's three reasons that I see over and over and over again as to why people's businesses fail. And I'm not exempt from these. In fact, as I go through all three of these reasons, I'm going to give outward examples, but I'm also going to give inward examples of where these things have riddled me. Because if you don't know this about me, I have ran quite a few businesses into the ground. And so I'm going to talk about my own experiences with these common business-killing mistakes that entrepreneurs make. So the three that we're going to be talking about today, I'm just going to jump right into them. I'll go through and I'll tell you which one is number one, which one is number two, which one is number three, and the lesson that you should learn. But let's just go ahead and jump into it. Number one. The biggest mistake that I see entrepreneurs make that just all three of these are kind of equal, so I don't know if they're in any particular order, but the first one that I'm going to cover, I guess I should approach it that way. The first one that I'm going to cover is people making what they want to sell rather than what people want to buy. This is such a huge mistake in the entrepreneurial realm. People have this brilliant idea. I want to teach people how to play chess in the way that was popular in New York at 1908. Well, great. You're passionate about that, but that doesn't mean that there's a market willing to pay for it. I want to make t-shirts that express a witty political opinion that me and four other people on the planet agree with. Great. You might be really passionate about that, but that doesn't mean that there's a passionate market waiting to make you rich off of that dream. And that's the thing is we're always told you got to follow your dream. As an entrepreneur, you got to follow your dream. And I think that's bullshit. Another one that I see all the time. I see this all the time. It's I want to make jewelry, or I want to do this particular, I want to do nails with this particular type of nail polish, or they niche themselves down. And people say, you got to niche down. And I kind of agree with that. But you don't want to niche yourself down to a niche where there's only four people in your audience. And Why I say that is I did this same thing. When me and my brother, we started a rap label back in 1998. God, I'm old. My little brother back in the day, he wanted to be a rapper. So we took a lot of money that we made with nefarious means and invested it into starting our own record label. We were pretty decent. I think we were actually pretty good at doing rap music. We had a really decent fan following. And between like 97 and 99, early 2000s, we had built up a really good fan following. We had a large underground audience. We were doing concerts. We had lots of people showing up to our concerts. We had people buying our mixtapes. And we were making a decent amount of money. And then 9/11 happened and the whole economy went to crap. No, that's not what ruined it. 9/11 happened and me and my brother both went off the deep end with conspiracy theories. And we started putting all of our crazy political beliefs into our rap music. And the rap music was still good. The quality was still good. But there was just not an audience, especially at that high patriotic time where, and this was, again, you got to understand, this was before the internet. This was before conspiracy theories and fake news, quote unquote, were as readily as available as they are now. This was still back in the day when you had to listen to Bill Cooper on shortwave radio in order to get your conspiracy theory fix. And there just wasn't an audience for it at the time. So our audience that was showing up to our shows because they enjoyed hearing our songs about growing up poor, they enjoyed hearing our songs about getting revenge on rival gang members, they enjoyed hearing our songs about fucking hood rats after concerts. We started talking about how George Bush was part of the New World Order and how the Vatican secretly ran the world from behind the scenes. And all of a sudden, those people that were turning up in droves for our concerts, they just stopped showing up because they came to the show for a good time. And instead they were getting preached at about how they were sheep and how they were idiots and how the sky was falling. And, we were making what we wanted to sell rather than what people wanted to buy. And you might say, well, that's noble and good for you. You didn't sell out. Well, we stopped selling out concert halls. We stopped selling out venues. We stopped selling out bars. It got really bad towards the end. And we ended up passing on a lot of. And at the time, I thought it was something I took pride in. I'm like, yes, we passed on this record deal because they wouldn't accept our terms. They tried to change our music, which was true. A lot of record labels were like, hey, we'd totally love to sign you guys if you'd be willing to tone down some of the political talk. And we said, no, this is our music. We're going to make it the way that we want. And while I still look back at those days and I'm glad with what we did, I'm glad with a lot of the decisions that we made, I am going to say that it wasn't good business decisions. It was maybe good. It was good personal decisions at the time. And to be honest, I look back at those times and we had fun. We had a good time. We did what we wanted to do. I'm glad that we didn't get signed to any record labels because knowing now what I know about the record industry, I'm glad that we didn't get enslaved into it. But I made the mistake of following my dream rather than listening to what the market was telling me. And it ended up costing us a lot of money. It ended up costing us a lot of opportunity. In the long run, I'm kind of happy that we made the choice that we made. But as far as a business decision, there's a reason I don't still own a record label. We'll just put it at that. So here's the lesson. Gary Halbert famously was asked, if you could have one thing to make your business a success, what would it be? And his answer was a hungry crowd. It doesn't matter how good your hamburgers are. It doesn't matter how good your location is. What matters is the crowd hungry? And that's the most important thing. So rather than making what you want to sell, if you want to be successful in business, you need to make what people want to buy. A good advertisement is like a good story. It pulls your prospect in, takes them on a journey, and delivers them to a buying decision. Too bad most ads suck. Most ads come off as hypey and salesy. Even worse, they come off as boring or confusing. Most business owners suck at writing ads, and most shoppers have learned to tune them out completely. Want the secret formula I use for writing my ads? You want your ads to stand out from all the noise? Want to know 9 foundational elements that make up a compelling piece of sales copy? Would you like some of the best editing tips I use to keep people reading what I write? Want it all for free? Well, I've got you covered. Head on over to copyandfunnels.com/guide and download your free advertiser's cheat sheet today. That's copyandfunnels.com/guide. Download your free guide and start getting more sales from your ads today. copyandfunnels.com/guide. All right, item number 2 up on the agenda today is, this is something I see so many people suffer from, and I even suffer from it myself. So again, I'm not pointing fingers, and I'll get into a real world example, a personal example of this, but the number 2 thing that I see hold most business owners back, prevent most business owners from ever being able to actually succeed, is something called imposter syndrome. Imposter syndrome is this belief that you're not good enough, this belief that you're not qualified, this belief that who are you to be providing this service or providing this advice or charging people for whatever it is that you're able to do for them. I see so many people that are great at doing something or provides a valuable service or provide a valuable product to the marketplace, and they're doing it for next to free or for free. I see people that are brilliant and great at doing certain things, and they do it for free. They're like, oh, I'm just doing it for the exposure. And I'm kind of the benefactor of this sometimes. People often reach out to me and they're like, hey, can I do this for free for you just for a testimonial? And I'm willing to do it, but I'm usually only willing to do it once. And if they do a good job, the next time I'm like, no, I'm not going to let you do this for free for me. You're going to take a payment whether you like it or not. This is something that I run into all the time, is people that are brilliant at doing something and they're just terrified of selling it. They're afraid to charge what it's worth, or they're afraid to charge it all. Sometimes they're even afraid to let people know that they can do it. And I don't want to put anybody on blast, but I have right now, just this morning, somebody gave me a free access to one of their online services. Right now, I've also got somebody who's working for free on developing an app for copy and funnels. And from what the guy showed me, brilliant. The dude is a brilliant code designer. He's a brilliant app designer. He's brilliant at coding. And he's not out there charging what he's worth. And I already told him, I was like, look, when this one's finished up, I have another job that I want you to do, and there's no way that I'm not paying you for this one. It's not going to happen. One of the guys that does a lot of back-end coding for me, that's actually set up the back-end of this new course that I've got coming out, I hit him up to program the educational part of Copy and Funnels, the back-end login members only area access area. And I was like, how much is it going to cost you to do this? And he was like, oh, don't worry about it. I'll just do it. I was like, no, dude, you do so much work for me, and I'm not going to not pay you for it. So I offered, my expectation was I was going to pay him $1,000 to do it. And he was like, oh no, it's not worth that. I was like, dude, don't tell me what it's worth. I just made like $5,000 off of selling this course. I need a back end to make it accessible to people. If I made $5,000 off of it and it doesn't work, unless you do what I need you to do, don't tell me that that's not worth at least $1,000 to me. To him, his work wasn't worth that much. To me, as somebody who desperately needed what he could do, it was absolutely worth that much. So again, just another example of somebody brilliant at their craft, brilliant at doing what they do, and afraid to charge what they're worth in order to do it. And again, this hits everybody. This hits very successful people as well. Some of the most successful people I know still get timid before they launch a product, still have that fear of failure, still have that fear that what if we put this out and nobody buys it? What if we open up our doors and it's to the sound of crickets? And even myself, recently I'm going live on Monday. We're going to be going live with this email course. And I was terrified to launch this course. I sat on the material. I had a really rough idea of what I wanted to do, and I sat on it. I wouldn't talk about it to people, and I kind of milled it around in the back of my brain, and I put up a sales page just to see the response, and I ran like two or three Facebook ads just to gauge whether people would be interested in it or not, and tons of people bought it. Like the first week that it was open, I went through more than half of the available seats. The first week that it was open for pre-sale. And I ended up having to raise the price to not run out of seats before we actually go live. And I'm going to end up having to do it again just for the same reason, because we're selling seats too fast to the event. And it's an email course. And yes, I've written emails for a few years now. I've been writing emails for about 4 or 5 years now. Yes, I'm really good at writing emails. Yes, I get a lot of sales out of my emails. Yes, I've written emails for a lot of different people, a lot of different industries. Yes, people come to me and pay me to help them tweak up their email campaigns. But as far as creating a course, creating an info product, I definitely was like, well, if I do this, my mentors like Ben Settle and Matt Fury, people are going to compare me to them, and people are going to be like, who do you think you are, Nathan? When there's already people like Matt and there's already people like Ben out there offering a similar product, who do you think you are to offer a course on email marketing? Why should I buy a course from you when there's these people who have obviously been doing it longer than you, and they're obviously, the leaders in the field, and you're just some 2-bit copywriter? Who are you to offer a course? These are the things that was going through my mind that held me back from even creating the sales page and even letting people know that I was toying around with the idea of offering a course. This is imposter syndrome. It affects me. It affects the most brilliant business people I know. And of course it affects you. There's nothing wrong with that. But I went out, I created the sales page, I ran a couple of Facebook ads, and I ended up selling out half of the course on the first week that it was available for pre-sale. So again, if I had listened to that imposter syndrome, I would have never put the course out. And even though and here's the deal, I did let it affect me a little bit, because I sold the pre-sale tickets for $37. And when I showed the materials to some of the mentors that I have, and I was like, this is what I'm planning on doing. Some of the people that I was afraid to even let know that I was doing it, because I was afraid that they were going to be like, hey, this is my domain. You don't deserve to write a course in this. I showed some of those people the materials that I was doing, and they were like, dude, you should not be charging. This should be like $1,000 course. You're an idiot for charging less than $500 for it. $37 is way too little. You need to jack that price up right away. So, it even affects me. Imposter syndrome affects me. It affects so many entrepreneurs. It stops so many entrepreneurs from doing what they could do, from providing the valuable service that they can provide. It stops them from charging what they're worth, which means they don't have a profitable business, which means they struggle. They never have extra income to invest in marketing. They never have extra income to invest in themselves. And so all in all, imposter syndrome destroys so many businesses. And here's the lesson. You don't have to be the best in the world at what you do to charge a good fee for it. You just have to be better than the people who are paying you for the help. If they're paying you and you get them to the next level, or you get them to 3 levels ahead of where they're at, you don't have to be the guy that is 15 levels ahead of them. You just have to be the guy or girl or attack helicopter or unicorn. I'm not going to judge. You just have to be the individual that is better than they are and actually delivers, helping them get to the next area where they need to be. And that makes you totally qualified to charge what you're worth. All right. Here's the third one, and this one's going to piss off some of my anarcho-capitalist listeners. It's going to piss off some of my Austrian economics listeners, and this is here I go. All right, number three, thinking that a good product will sell itself. So here's the deal. People always say, well, in a free market, in an unregulated market, the best product will naturally rise to the top. Competition will naturally bring the best product to the front of the marketplace with the best price possible. Have you heard that one before? I have, and I gotta tell you, it's bullshit. So here's the deal. This is like a very common belief amongst Austrian economists, and I actually consider myself to be an Austrian economist. I tend to favor Austrian economics above Chicago, above Keynesian style economics. Austrian economics are the closest to reality, but Austrian economics have their flaws. And one of them is the idea that a good product will sell itself. A good product will not sell itself. And here's a story from my own past again. A product that we created a few years back. We created this product called My Graffiti Cake. So at the time, I was working in a bakery. One of the hottest things was, and I don't know if you even know this about me. I actually used to be a graffiti artist back in my hip hop days. The reason that I got into making rap music in the first place is because I used to be out doing graffiti, and so I met a lot of rappers, a lot of freestylers, a lot of DJs. And through the graffiti world, I kind of came into the hip hop world, and I started a job working in a bakery, and they had an airbrush, and so I was like, "Huh." One of the other cake decorators, this lady, she was like, "Hey, you should try spray painting a cake," and so I used the airbrush and I started doing with food coloring, started spraying graffiti designs on cakes, and it became a huge hit. Like people would come from three towns over to come get their cake done custom by me to have their kid's name done in graffiti on the cake. And so it became such a popular thing that I was like, well, I'm getting tired of doing this over and over and over again. Like it got to the point where I was airbrushing like 5 or 6 cakes a day. And I was like, there's got to be a faster way to do this. So I went to one of my friends that knew how to code. And I went to another one of my friends who had some investment money. And I was like, look, guys, I want to create a software that allows us to mass produce graffiti cakes for people. So for people outside of the cake world, there's this thing called edible images. It's a photo cake. It's where you basically print with food coloring on a sheet of rice paper. And when you print it, you take that rice paper and you put it on top of the cake, and it allows you to add a photo to the top of the cake. Well, we created a software that allowed you to pick a pre-designed graffiti background that said happy birthday, and then you could type in the person's name and it would print up their name in another graffiti font on top of it. You could adjust where you wanted it to appear on the image. You print it out, you slap it on a cake, and there you have a custom graffiti cake for your kid's birthday. It filled a huge hole in the market. I don't know if you've been to a bakery, but most bakeries, they have cakes for kids that are all the different new Disney toys and the different cartoons out there, and monster trucks and tractors and stuff like that, crowns and scepters for little girls, princess stuff. They've got tons of cake designs for up to 13 years old. Then they have like floral designs, and they have party cakes for people 35 and over, but they don't really have any cakes for that 15 to 25 year old range of people. And so that's what My Graffiti Cake was all about. It was perfect for that range of buyers. And we ended up selling tons of these cakes, and we got the interest of a multi-billion dollar company that wanted to have an exclusive deal with us to develop this software for their franchise. And so we jumped in. We're like, yeah, we'll take this and we'll develop it for your franchise. We spent 2 years developing them a custom version of our software. And at the very end, after we put 2 years of our work into it, after we put 2 years of our lives, 2 years of investing They ended up not liking the terms that we came to them with. They wanted exclusive. They wanted not only the rights to the version that we made for them, but they wanted exclusive rights to the entire intellectual property of the company, which I was not having. We put 2 years into this, and I knew it was a hot product. I knew that it sold in the bakeries that we had tested it in. They wanted us to go to those bakeries and renege on the software that those bakeries had already bought from us. And we pulled out. And without that franchise's marketing department behind pushing the software, we had no marketing plans at all. And so we had a product that was a brilliant product. It was selling great, but we had zero marketing plan at all. And we had just lost 2 years worth of money that we had invested in, time that we had invested, and we had no way to market this product. And so it was a vastly superior product to anything out there, especially for the market that we were trying to target. But we had no marketing plan and no marketing dollars, and that business quickly went bankrupt because the business model was just not there. The business model wasn't there. The marketing model, the marketing program was not there. And even though it was a superior product, it didn't matter. It's not the best product. Here's the lesson. It's not the best product that dominates the market. It's the best marketed product. So those are the three biggest reasons that I see businesses fail, that I see entrepreneurs fail. Number one, trying to make what you want to sell rather than what people want to buy. Number two, suffering from imposter syndrome. And number three, thinking that a good product will sell itself. Those are the three most common mistakes that kill entrepreneurial dreams. All right. I hope that this was valuable to you. I hope that it helps you avoid the pain and heartbreak that I've had to go through myself with my multiple failures in my business life. And if you found this episode valuable and you know a business owner that needs to hear this message, please, 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 for their sake and for mine, because I need the ratings in iTunes, please share this episode with them and let them know, hey, you might be making these three mistakes, or hey, I want to help you out and I want to make sure that you don't make these three mistakes. Because like I said, these are the three most common mistakes that ruin most entrepreneurs. All right. I want to say thank you for tuning in. Thank you for dealing with the fact that my voice is not 100%. And thank you for being considerate and understanding about the fact that it's been 2 weeks since I put out the last episode and you still showed up to listen to this one. I appreciate that. My name's Nathan Frazier. I'm the High Priest of Propaganda. I'm out of here. Faith in each other, not in authority. Be your own boss. Hashtag BYO boss. Deuces. All right, real quick, before I'm out of here, I have to let you know, okay? So I mentioned in the show this email marketing course that I've been putting together. Me and Landon Porter are going to be... Landon Porter is the guy that does Sales Guerrilla, getting clients without being salesy, just a brilliant sales guy. And he's going to be helping me co-host this new email marketing course that I've put together. And we're going to be doing this next week. So Monday, April 8th at 11 o'clock in the morning, Mountain Time. That's like 10 o'clock Pacific Time, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. We go live with the very first training. It's going to be 5 days long. It's going to start on Monday at 11, Tuesday at 9 o'clock my time, which is Mountain Time, which would be 7 o'clock. No, damn it. I'm fucking shit up because I can't think right because I'm sick and I don't know how to do time zones. Monday at 11 o'clock Mountain Time. Everything's going to be Mountain Time because that's all I can think of right now. Monday at 11 o'clock Mountain Time, we're starting the course. The rest of the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, there's going to be trainings every single day. And the first training is going to be on the foundations of email marketing. So you'll get everything you need to know to be out there email marketing right now. The second day, we're going to go through 6 or 7 different ways to build your email marketing list or your email list, including one way that can actually pay you while you build your list. It's a list building technique that actually pays you. And the third day, Wednesday, we're going to be talking about an onboarding sequence, a welcome sequence when people first join your email list, how to get them used to you, how to get them acquainted with you, how to introduce them into your world and still make sales at the same time. The fourth day, Thursday, we're going to be talking about, 16 or 17 different email marketing templates, 16 or 17. I can't remember the total number. I think it's 16. 16 different templates for writing emails so that you never run out of emails to send people. And I actually go through in this module, we're going to go through and I'm going to show you how I break down the process of writing an email, how I decide what I'm going to write about, how I decide to structure the emails so that I never run out of emails to write. And then the last day, I'm going to be teaching you a limited time offer email sequence. This is a 3-day sequence designed to maximize the amount of sales that you can get of something. So all week long, every single day, we're going to be doing an hour, maybe an hour and 15 minute training to teach you one of the 5 key foundational aspects of email marketing. And like I said, right now, the course, if you act today, right now, Thursday, the 5th of April, if you act today up until midnight my time, you can get in, you can get pre-sale tickets for this course at $97. Tonight at midnight my time, I'm switching it over. It's going to stop being, actually, you know what? I'm changing that because I want to go to sleep early tonight. Tonight at midnight Pacific time, which would be, I think, 9 o'clock. I need to stop doing the time zones, damn it. 9 o'clock or midnight Pacific time. If you don't get in before midnight Pacific time, the price goes up. It's $97 right now. It's going up to $197. It's going to stay at $197 all weekend. At Sunday night, the day before the course goes live, Sunday night, it's going up to $397. So get it today if you want it for $197. Get it over the weekend if you want it for, or get it tonight if you want it for $97. Get it before the end of the weekend if you want it for $197. And if you don't act tonight, if you don't act by the end of the weekend, you're going to be paying $397 for the course. Like I said, everybody I've shown the course to, I've shown it to some of my email marketing mentors. I've shown it to a lot of my marketing buddies. I've shown it to the people in my mastermind. Everybody that's seen the material says I should be selling it for $1,000. I want to make this available to entrepreneurs. I want this to be available to people that are just starting their entrepreneurial journey. I don't want it to be priced out of their range. So $97 for the rest of the day, $197 after tonight and for the rest of the weekend. And then after that, $397. And it might even go up after that, depending on how many bonuses I decide to throw in. And yes, there will be bonuses. All right. My name is Nathan Frazier. Head on over to copyandfunnels.com, hover over the courses tab, click the email marketing course, get signed up. Do not pass on this opportunity. Unless you're somebody who doesn't like investing in yourself, then I don't even know why you're listening to this podcast in the first place. I'm Nathan Frazier, copyandfunnels.com, courses, email marketing. I'm out of here. Deuces. P.S. Thank you for putting up with my shenanigans, nonsensical speaking, and the fact that my head is still not 100% in the game, but I had to get this promotion out there. I'm out of here. Deuces. Copyandfunnels.com, courses, email marketing.